Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
In 86, N.M. Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time for the Babysitter's Club.
Hi, and welcome to the Babysitter's Club Club.
Yeah.
A podcast in which
A lot of people forget that second club.
Yeah. If we were saying hi,
but it's important.
And welcome to the Babysitter's Club, you would expect us to be
Christy and Marianne.
Yeah. Wow. You just went there. That's what it is, isn't it, though?
Which is weird because, like, our roles on this podcast are that you are Christy and I am Marianne.
And
our roles in real life
are
that I am Christy and you are Marianne.
You need a Christy to say, order. Hi, and welcome to the Babysitter's Club Club. I'm Jack Shepherd.
I'm Tanner Greenring.
And this is a podcast where we read the classic books in the Sitter's Cycle by Princess Anne... Princeton's own. Princess Anne Matthews.
She's not a princess. Princeton's.
Princeton's own. Yeah.
Anne Matthews Martin. We
love Princess
you,
of
Anne.
Princeton. We love you.
We love you. We kiss you.
Yeah. And here we are reading...
Please come on our show.
Please come on our show.
Anne, change my tune.
Yeah. Anne, come on.
Anne.
What are you doing? Anne. We know you're listening.
Anchor.
Listen, Anne. More water.
Anne, could you bring us more water?
Anne, your skin is hanging all off your face.
All right, let's stop doing our good, very good Men in Black impressions. And move on to discussing book number 28 in the Babysitter's Cycle. Welcome back, Stacy.
Welcome back, comma, Stacy! Exclamation point. Good book today, Tanner? Did you like it?
Hated it.
Oh, really?
Don't like Stacy. Don't like confronting divorce. Don't like confronting controversy.
Yeah.
Hate that my... Jack Shepherd, yes, Baby sir. Nation, Anne Matthews Martin promised me that death was... totally avoidable in the universe of the Babysitter's Club. She said, I promise you, Tanner Greenring, no one will ever die or even age. And I said, I believe you, Anna Martin. I trust you. I put my faith in you. And therefore, I'm going to declare that Mimi Yamamoto is my bedrock, the person who I can always rely on to be there, the person who will always give us the best advice, everything I need in mother figure, mentor figure, and then Anna Martin took her away from me.
Murdered her.
Fuck you, Anna Martin.
But please do come on the show.
Please do come on the show. So I look for a new bedrock. You and I had to find something else to put our faith in.
Where did we go?
Well, one obvious place. The love shared between Mr. McGill, Mrs. McGill, you and I.
Yeah, a love that could never die.
Will never die.
Should never die. And then what happened?
I fucking died, Jack. Nothing good can ever stay pure and good in this world outside of, I want to stress this, outside of Stony Brook, Connecticut.
I think that's a really interesting thing to come back to, the idea that nothing good can last outside of Stony Brook. Everything goes rotten outside of the town of Stony Brook. I want to dwell briefly on why we're being so harsh on Princess Martin.
I don't love calling her princess.
It's
I feel
kinda...
like you've just sort of drunkenly confused Princeton's and princess, and you're just going with it.
It just feels right, doesn't it, Princess Martin?
It's Queen Martin, if anything. K-W-E-E-N.
Yeah, Queen. Our Queen.
Yes.
Stop it, I don't like it. Princess... Princess...
Princeton's own.
Princeton's own. Princess... Anne Matthews Martin. I just can't. It's in there. It's in there. We're just going to have to leave it in there. We're going to have to figure out what to do with it. The reason that we're being so harsh on her...
it's because we love her.
Well, it's because we love her. And her note at the end of this book... and Baby Nation and Tanner, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. But she essentially says, Hey, we did some demographic research, and we realized that 47% of our fans identify with Stacy, and we're losing sales because Stacy's not in the Babysitter's Club anymore. So we killed the love that existed between her parents in order that we might get her back in Estonia.
This is our fucking bedrock. You know what? Not fuck you, Anna Martin. Yeah. I know you were just doing your job.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Scholastic lawyers. And I know...
Oh, but you're all sitting there right now.
I know a number of you.
Yeah.
Listen to the show.
12 to be precise.
How dare you twist Anne M. Martin's arm like this?
Yeah.
And force her to take away the one thing that Jack Shepherd and I had left. Rotten and hell, you fucking jackals.
And I will say, just to clarify on Tanner's behalf, allegedly rotten hell. You alleged jackals. From what I've heard, there are those who many people are saying.
Many people are saying
that you are jackals who should rot in hell for what you did to the McGills.
Yep.
What you allegedly did to the McGills.
Which you allegedly did to the McGills.
And
which
I
you
have...
allegedly did to Princeton's own and Princess Martin.
Yep. Good. We're off to a great start. New listeners. I'm glad you stuck with us.
We're not usually this angry, but this is the second time in as many weeks that Scholastic's lawyers have taken away everything we know to be true and that we love.
Yeah. This is essentially part two of two of a very special episode of the Babysitter's Club Club. First, our beloved Mimi Yamamoto, Claudia Kishi's grandmother.
I'm not ready to talk about it.
An event
Don't
happened.
Say it.
An event happened involving her. You can go back and listen if you want to hear about it. And after the tragedy that was that event, now the Scholastic lawyers, in concert with a probably battered down and under duress Princess Anne Matthews Martin, decided to kill a second thing, which is the love between Maureen and Edward McGill, Stacy's parents.
Where'd you find their names?
Excuse me?
Where did you find their names?
Let's not worry
never
about
say
that.
It in the sex.
Here's what we're going to do, Baby Nation. We're going to tell you what happened in this book, and we're going to do it via an ancient segment.
20 weeks old, this segment is, the prophecy says.
In which...
The worn texts declare.
The ancient parchment, if you look at it, says that this segment has been around since before written language. And it
before the year of 16 after the millennia.
It's a segment that you wouldn't think it would be hard to fucking get to if you were hosting this podcast.
Verily.
It's literally a segment in which we describe what happened in the book. But
yes.
It's surprisingly difficult. I'm trying to get there now.
Verily. Hail.
I, Jack Shepherd, am going...
And I, Tanner Greenring.
Let me just take the reins for a second here. I, Jack Shepherd, am going to give you a back-of-the-book blurb of what happened in Welcome Back, Stacy.
Yeah, I guess if the back of the book was the size of the placard that the Statue of Liberty holds.
Okay, good. Perfect. And after I do that, I'm going to put 60 seconds on the old clock, and we're going to have Tanner here fill in all the details with a whirlwind tour through the ins and outs of this, to mix our metaphors, roller coaster ride that was Welcome Back, Stacy! Exclamation point.
Roller coasters are pretty windy.
Yep. Nope. No, sir.
That's
no,
not
sir.
Really a mixed metaphor.
Oh, I see. You know what we should do?
Yeah.
Let's do the thing that I said.
I'm all ears, man.
Good. I'm going to describe what happened in this book, then I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock. You're going to describe what happens in the book. Why would this segment, where we both do the same thing twice, have lasted as long as it has? I don't know, but it's what we do.
It's what we do.
I'm going to begin. You ready, sir?
Yep.
In her mid-30s, Maureen McGill had everything a young woman could want. A husband, a beautiful, talented daughter, and a magnificent apartment in New York City.
Talented is generous.
Okay. But instead of feeling happy and fulfilled, she felt shiftless and lost, tired of cocktail parties and Tiffany's and New York high society, tired of her husband and tired of herself. So Maureen McGill decided to go out into the world and find a life that would make her soul sing again. This heartfelt, rapturous book about one woman's journey of self-discovery is the inspiring true story of how Maureen left everything she knew behind to learn hope, to capture joy, and to be surprised by love again in suburban Connecticut, right outside of Stamford, just off the I-95. Welcome back, Stacy. Now, what are you doing?
Fishing in this hole in your wall.
Can you stop?
Pull all the rocks out of it.
Banned from his phone, Tanner Greenring nonetheless finds ways to entertain himself during a bleak and boring description of this book.
Jack has a brick wall here in his Brooklyn apartment.
Let's not.
And I just now notice on my side of the table is a pinky-sized hole between two bricks.
How about let's not?
That I'm just really jamming.
How about let's engage with this book that we read today instead of literally destroying my house figuratively.
It's pre-destroyed.
The metaphor continues to expand. Did you listen to the thing that I said?
Yeah, I caught most of it.
I, for what it's worth, took most of it from the write-up of Eat, Pray, Love.
Let me tell you what really happened in this book, Jack.
Great. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock.
Yep.
I want you to describe what happened in this book
yep.
during those 60 seconds.
Yep.
And I would like you to limit your comments to those 60 seconds.
Yep.
We're going to begin now.
Yep. Mr. and Mrs. McGill are having a rough time. They're fighting about everything. They're fighting about mostly money. Mr. McGill makes a lot of it. Mrs. McGill spends a lot of it. They decide to get a divorce, which is tough, but frankly, the only foreseeable Brexit for these two. Exit. The only foreseeable exit for these two.
I almost do this mistake here.
The only foreseeable exit for these two. Mr. McGill moves to an apartment in the Upper East Side.
Yeah.
Mrs. McGill decides to move back to Stony Brook. Stacy is conflicted about whether she wants to move back to Stony Brook with her mother.
Stacy is their daughter.
Yep. Sorry. You should know that by now, though. Mr. McGill. No.
I got you so good. I threw you off.
Stacy is conflicted about whether she wants to move. She moves back to Stony Brook with her mom.
Good.
That's into the apartment behind Mallory's house.
Yeah.
House. Into the house behind Mallory's house.
Yeah. That's significant. That was a little unfair. I cut you off a bunch of times.
That's fine. Look at all these rocks I pulled out of your wall.
Just stop it. Let's continue to talk about this book, my friend.
We were talking about a book?
Welcome back, Stacy.
Welcome back, Jack and Tanner.
Let's see. Where do I want to start? Should we start with the Hamlet stuff?
Yep.
Good. Do you want to go or do you want me to go?
You start and I'll kind of follow suit.
Okay. Did you catch the
hell big, yeah, I did.
The big Hamlet reference?
Yep. To be or not to be, that is the question.
Yeah, it's early on. No, it wasn't that.
Yeah.
It is similarly has become a cliche a little bit in
forever and forever and forever.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Yep. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. Creeps on this petty pace.
To the last syllable of recorded time.
Yep.
And all our yesterdays have lighted fools.
Out of damn spot.
That. Yep. Both Macbeth. Sir. Both Macbeth.
And what's the difference?
Two different plays.
Okay.
Great.
How do I draw a dream?
How about, what even is that?
To dream. Perchance to sleep. Perchance to dream.
Great.
Is that Hamlet?
Good.
That's Hamlet?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't say let's quote random lines from Shakespeare. I said, let's talk about the resonance
Grace
specifically.
Says, how do I draw a dream?
Grace does?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, she does, doesn't she? Grace is Stacy's babysitting charge in New York City in her apartment. And she says, how do I draw a dream?
How do I draw a dream? Sleep. Perchance to dream.
Wow, great. No, that's not what I was.
That's from Hamlet.
That is from Hamlet. How do I draw a dream is not from Hamlet. That sounds like it's from Reading Rainbow. how about we let me say the thing?
Yep.
Great. There's a moment when Stacy is still in denial that her parents are going to get a divorce.
Uh-huh.
And she says,
well, I've been through that, right? Except Jack.
Right.
His parents love one another.
50% have been through that. Can't you work things out like two adults? That's what you always say to me when I'm having a fight with a friend. I was protesting too much. Isn't that how the saying goes?
She doth protest too much.
The lady doth protest too much, methinks, says Gertrude to Hamlet.
Yep.
In Hamlet.
The play?
The play by Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And there are a number of reasons why I thought that that was more than toss-off line here. First of all, Hamlet is a play that is about the most fucked up marriage ever.
Okay. Do you mean Macbeth?
No, I mean Hamlet.
Out, out, damn spot.
Gertrude, like Hamlet's mom, marries this new dude who just killed his dad.
Well, she didn't know.
She kind of knew. Second of all, the choice that Stacy, I mean Hamlet, has to make is whether or not to dispose of her father, right?
Yes.
For Stacy to go back to Stony Brook, she must first commit this ritual act.
But as Claudia says to her,
whereby she fucking wounds her own father.
As Claudia says to her, to address this point, you had to make a decision. Stacy has to make a decision. She either has to wound her father or her mother.
Right.
There's no way to not wound anybody.
But as counterpoint, we always knew what she was going to do. This is a novel that is in many ways about agency.
Yep.
It's about
agree.
It's about Stacy having this choice.
Yep.
Do I live with my mom? Do I live with my dad? What do I do? The book is her dithering the whole way through, like Hamlet.
Yep.
Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to go to Stony Brook,
suffer
and
the
live
slings
with
and arrows
my mom,
Stony Brook,
to move to the fucking
suffer
shitty
the slings and arrows of New York City,
Upper East Side. With my dad.
Yes.
And yet, I think you will have noted as well, that agency doesn't really exist. Because this book is called
Welcome Back, Stacy.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You're going back to Stony Brook. She always knew that what she was going to do was kill her father, was kill off the toxic masculinity that was controlling her life.
Well, good.
That
this is empowering then, Jack. Here's what I captured.
Yeah.
Could I leave New York again? How could I leave behind everything I love? I'd have to leave Lane, Grace, Henry, and the city itself. I truly heart New York.
Yeah.
The note I captured was, oh no, what will Stacy do in this book titled Welcome Back, Stacy?
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
Anna Martin does not leave a lot to the imagination here.
It would be as if, and maybe this is true, the working title for Hamlet had been Hamlet Kills Claudius Eventually. Exclamation point.
Yeah. Well, Anna Martin is in a lot of ways much like Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Very prolific.
Yeah.
Very beloved.
Yeah.
Brilliant wordsmith.
Mm-hmm.
But she's writing for a 13-year-old audience.
Right.
So subtlety is iffy.
If you think about,
I mean, she totally caught us off guard last week with Claudia and the sad goodbye. We had no idea that Claudia was going to be saying goodbye to Mimi.
Yeah.
And here we are in a Mimi-less world.
Right.
Listless, drifting in the darkness.
Is it possible that given the strict and strange and arcane rules of fictional or outside of time, outside of reality, Stony Brook, Connecticut, that Mimi had to die in order to bring the seven babysitters back together, that was her last gift to us, that she expended her energy.
What a terrible gift. Mimi dies so you can bring fucking Stacy McGill back?
It's not about Stacy. I agree. Worst babysitter.
Ugh.
But it's about making the seven one again. Like, do you think that the expenditure of energy that happened in Mimi's voluntary sacrifice is what brought Stacy back?
Yes. Absolutely, I think so.
I think so, too.
There was only room for one Nani.
Nani being Christie's grandmother.
Yeah. And seven.
There must be seven.
There must be seven.
For the circle to be complete, there must be seven.
There must be seven babysitters, and there must be one Nani.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I absolutely think Mimi Yamamoto sacrificed herself. I hate that the seven are one again, man. It's too many babysitters. Someone's got to go.
Yeah.
And I have some suggestions for who should depart. Now that Stacy is back.
Okay. Stacy.
Stacy. Number one is Stacy.
Number one is Stacy.
Go back to New York.
Maybe probably also Claudia. No. Okay. All right. I'll take it back. I take it back. Baby Nation.
Her grandmother just died. All right. You monster.
She actually seems better. She seems better now that Stacy's back.
Mimi is still warm.
No, she's not. Actually, I have a line.
Oh, yeah. Stacy really, like, goes to a really morbid place at some point late in the book.
Yeah, here we go. Here's proof that Mimi, and sorry, everybody, but is not still warm. Claudia and I both stopped working for a moment and knew we were remembering that sunny day when we'd buried Mimi, watching whatever was left of her as she was lowered into a cold hole in the ground. Claudia had tossed a flower onto her casket. Like, fucking hell.
That's just what Stacy fantasizes. Like, that's what goes through her head at all times.
Yeah.
Like, she's just picturing scenes of death. She's really fucked up.
Stacy is fucked up. Well, is it her New York values, you know?
Yeah, just like me and you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I have a theory about this book.
Okay.
What is one clear signal that everything you're about to encounter is absurdist fiction in the Babysitter's Club universe?
In the Babysitter's Club universe, and this is established in many previous books, when Anne Matthews Martin introduces an elephant in some way, that means shit is going to go completely off the deep end. It's going to become absurd, chaotic, and strange and unpredictable.
Page 12 in my text. Mm-hmm. Stacy is watching two of her New York City charges, mm-hmm. Grace and Henry. How are you doing? I asked Grace, looking at her picture. Grace was bent over, concentrating hard. She was drawing slowly and carefully, her tongue sticking out of the corner of her mouth. Fine, she replied, straightening up. Do you like my picture, Stacy? It's an elephant, and the elephant is in a bathtub. There's no water in it. He's taking a nap, see? There's a pillow.
Yeah.
Henry giggled. Give him a blanket, he said. Show him that he's dreaming about a Bronto. This book didn't actually happen. This book is a dream sequence.
Okay.
I don't think Stacy's actually back in Stony Brook. What we've been given here is a clear indication that this is absurdist.
Yeah.
And then Henry doubles down by saying, show him that he's dreaming about a Bronto. Show him that he's dreaming about something extinct, something past, something that will never exist again.
Wow. The seven being one.
Stacy living in Stony Brook.
Stacy living in Stony Brook. Claudia being happy again.
Yeah. It's a dream sequence. Literally the next line.
Yeah.
After that, give him a blanket, he said, and show that he's dreaming about a Bronto. How do I draw a dream? Says Grace.
That's from Hamlet, right?
Yeah, it's from Hamlet.
Yeah. Yep.
This is a fantasy. And therefore,
yeah,
the McGills, Mr. and Mrs.
Still happy.
Still very happy.
They love each other.
This is a perverted fantasy on the part of Stacy McGill, a dream fantasy.
Right.
Just to get back to the way things were back in Stony Brook. The beautiful, idealistic place that is Stony Brook.
Wow.
I think either Stacy did, in fact, move back to Stony Brook, which is very unlikely at this point.
Right.
Or from book 28 on, everything is a dream within the mind of Stacy McGill.
All right. Let's bear that in mind. Very briefly, the thing that I want to talk about that may play into your idea that this is a dream. Did you note which specific house Stacy and her mom eventually choose to move into?
Absolutely, I did.
Do you know whose house it was?
It was the French witch hunters.
Yeah.
The French witch hunters.
Yeah.
No longer live in Stony Brook.
Yeah.
I assume because their mission is complete.
Hang on. If you have a passing memory of having read these books as a kid,
right,
you may have missed or have forgotten. Or
I would have said the opposite. I would have said if you had a passing memory of these books, you probably remember the French witch hunters who lived in the house behind the Pike's house.
Right. But maybe you'd like to explain for the baby bees who have forgotten.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The French government, under the guidance of Charles de Gaulle.
Yep.
Sent over two French spies to keep an eye on the increasing paranormal activity in Stony Brook, Connecticut. This is established in the text. Yeah. They are witch hunters. They are there to hunt down witches like Morbid Destiny, like the burgeoning talent of
Karen Brewer.
Mm-hmm. They are there to keep an eye on the doll threat So the Pike kids like to spy on these two French people.
Right.
They were convinced that they were Russian spies. Turns out that they were actually French witch hunters.
Yeah.
They're now gone.
Yeah.
What could cause a house previously occupied by two French witch hunters to suddenly be available under market,
right,
in a good neighborhood for a recent divorcee and her daughter?
Here's what I think. The French witch hunters never did a great job, right? Stony Brook is fucking infested with witches. I love that the French government is expending resources in the 80s to try to deal with this.
Yeah.
But it's not working.
I think this was a scouting mission.
When Stacy comes back and the seven are one again, there are seven babysitters. The circle is complete. They don't need some like vigilante French motherfuckers to do the work that Americans can do in Stony Brook. As soon as they learned that the McGill's love had been killed off.
Yeah.
And Stacy was coming home. They were like, our work is done here.
Stacy, we are not needed here.
We're not needed here.
Hey, everybody. It's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game, June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which, to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well,
should we move into a segment, my man?
I captured something.
Okay.
That I like to think of as a... Tearful moment.
Oh, that was good.
The McGill. No,
sorry. Couldn't help myself.
The McGills.
Yeah.
Spend this entire book fighting.
Yeah.
About, frankly, like ridiculous things.
Yeah.
Stacy's trying to decide between whether or not she's going to move in with her father, who's remaining in New York City, and her mother, who's, at this point in the text, considering moving back to Stony Brook, Connecticut.
Right. It's on the cards.
Where's the apartment, Dad? I asked. East 60s. East 65th Street, to be exact. Never lived on the east side, I said. A horrible expression crossed Mom's face. You want to move in with your father? I thought you'd want to go back to Stony Brook, Stacy. You said that it was up to me. Besides, I didn't say I was going to go live with Dad. Just that I've never lived on the east side. And this is my tearful moment.
Yeah.
Dad said, East 56th Street is just a few inches away from Bloomingdale's. It's just this like incredibly fraught emotional moment.
Yeah.
Where everyone is just making a land grab.
Yeah.
And all Mr. McGill can think to do is just be like, like his wife, who he still loves but is no longer in love with.
Yeah. As
and his daughter are like panicking.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a few blocks from Bloomingdale's.
And he does such
I'm just trying to make you happy.
I felt so bad for him during this whole turf war over Stacy. He like he's trying his best. Like he obviously wants Stacy to move in with him.
Yeah.
He's like, good news, Stacy. I found a man cave like on the Upper East Side. Like there's like a game room.
It's just a couple blocks away from Bloomingdale's.
Yeah. It's right across the street from this awesome dive bar, and like he suddenly realizes when Stacy is talking about where she's actually gonna live that he's completely misjudged what she wants, and he pulls in this like fucking Bloomingdale shit.
I'm gonna look it up. He lives on the corner of 65th and 3rd Avenue. There's no bars in that
area. No, there's no bars in that area. I've tried to go there. They could go to, like, I don't know. It's a nightmare. It's a fucking nightmare. It's a hell to live there.
I'm scanning through Google Maps. There's no bars in that
there's
area.
Nothing there.
Where's he going to meet women?
Oh, so this comes up in the book. Did you catch this?
No. There's a Le Pont Quotidien. Le Pont.
Stacy is waiting for her dad to come home, and she goes, but Dad didn't come home. He phoned to say he was going to spend the evening apartment hunting and then sleep at his office. He does that sometimes. There's a couch in his office, and he keeps a clean suit hanging behind the door.
Yeah.
Your dad's not fucking sleeping at the office, dude.
No. You know who he's sleeping with?
Edward McGill is not sleeping. Who is he sleeping with?
Who did we decide was an escort? Mrs. Radowski?
Mrs. Barrett?
Mrs. Barrett.
Mrs. Barrett.
He's out in Stony Brook visiting Mrs. Barrett.
Well, and you know what this made me think, too, related to that, is that there's only one real eligible bachelor in Stony Brook.
Oh, my God. I thought this exact same thing.
Yeah.
There's a new go to her.
Wow. What? Tell me.
Well, Mrs. McGill.
Yeah.
Who I assume will retake her maiden name. I don't know what it is, but we'll find out soon enough. Is now on the market in Stony Brook, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And you know who is also on the market in Stony Brook, Connecticut?
Tripman?
No! Jack? Mr. Spear.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm telling you. This terrifies me. Mr. Spear.
I think Mrs. Schaefer. Dude. Fine, stay with Tripman, Mrs.
No,
Schaefer.
Fuck you.
You've made your own bed.
No, I had this. You took down the exact opposite thing from what I took down. I was like, do not, Miss McGill, she's a gorgeous, intellectual, fascinating New York woman coming to Stony Brook.
Sounds wonderful.
That's going to be dangerous for Mr. Spear.
Like, no, absolutely not. Mr. Spear should go to her.
Wait.
Go to her, Mr. Spear. Go to her.
You don't care at all about his relationship with Dawn's mom?
Dawn's mom made her choice. She loves Tripman.
Oh, I strongly disagree with this. I strongly disagree with this.
Mrs.
I wrote this
Schaefer
down.
Loves Tripman.
Keep your claws out of Mr. Spear, Mrs. McGill.
Hard disagree. Go to him.
Wow. You heard it here first.
Go to him.
Wow. Wow. No. Dawn's mom and Marianne's dad are a match made in heaven. They've been waiting since fucking high school.
I ship Mrs. McGill.
Baby Nation, that's
maiden name TBD.
Piece of terminology from the modern times.
And Mr. Spear.
Wow. Wow. I strongly disagree.
OTP.
Good. Good. I know what that means. I wish I didn't. But here we are.
Jacko.
Yes.
My bud.
Sir.
Jazz.
Okay. Yep.
Jazz.
Yep. Yep.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
If I were to crack open a closet right now.
Oh. Okay. This is not the question I was expecting you to ask me. Yep.
Would you take a peek inside with me?
Yeah, I'll take a peek.
Into. Claudia's Closet! Featuring guest star Alan Gray.
Wow. let's have a look inside, sir.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. What's inside this joint closet?
Anything jump out at you wardrobe wise this week?
Yeah. It happened to be what Alan Gray was
wearing. Yeah, me too.
I wrote it down under my segment, Claudia's Closet.
Yeah, Baby Nation, Alan Gray is a boy who goes to Stony Brook Middle School.
He likes Christy.
Christy. He's into Christy.
He and Christy went to the Halloween Hop together.
A couple years ago now.
Babysitter's Club number 2, Claudia and the Phantom Phone Calls.
Yep.
They decided to go to the Halloween Hop together. Alan Gray has been a little bit of a fixture since then.
He's kind of a rude boy.
Yeah, he's a rude boy.
He likes making jokes.
He dresses his own
way. Kind of crude.
It was kind of established in this book that Christy, even though she doesn't like many boys, she only likes 2 possible boys.
Yep.
Alan Gray is number 2 on that list.
Yeah.
So it's not looking after Bart. Bart from Bart's Bashers. So not super happy about Alan's prospects with Christy.
You know what he's got to do? He's got to pull out all the stops.
Yeah.
And he's got to find some way to impress her.
Boy, did he fucking pull out all the stops this week with what he was wearing. Whatever Claudia was wearing, looking at my notes. She was wearing leggings and some fucking oversized sweater.
Big
and
sweater, and it was
whatever.
A weird color and skull earrings and a neon headband.
Just look at whatever.
Oh, and her hair was dumb.
Yeah.
Alan Gray, though.
Whoa.
He was wearing some wild shit.
Yeah.
He was trying to catch old Christie's eye.
Yeah.
Walk me through it.
A hat.
Uh-huh.
With an alligator on top of it.
Uh-oh.
And when he pulled this string, the alligator's mouth opened and closed, and its tail waved back and forth.
Nice.
That's fucking awesome.
That would catch my attention.
Yeah, you fucking bet it would. I would be like, see you later, Bart. I know that you're the handsome coach of a little league baseball team.
You got a hat like that, though, Bart?
What does your hat do?
I fucking think so.
Yeah. That is awesome. Baby Nation, take a second to picture this. It's an alligator hat.
Yeah.
It's got an alligator. There's a string coming out of it. And when you pull a string, the mouth opens and closes, and the tail goes back and forth.
It's good.
That's fucking awesome.
I'm going to go on eBay right now and see if I can buy something similar.
Yeah, that is a fucking good idea. I normally don't condone.
Tanner's alligator hat. Yep, very good.
Yeah.
Alan Gray was killing it this week. A rare appearance from Alan Gray, but he came in like a wrecking ball.
Yeah, he came in like a wrecking ball with the beautiful alligator-themed hat. Dude, what a badass. Christy, fucking don't choose Bart, choose Alan. He knows what he's about.
I'm with Alan.
I'm with Alan.
Hashtag
I'm with Alan.
Fuck, I think I found it.
Did you find it? Seriously?
Maybe. No, this one doesn't move. This one doesn't animate.
What did you Google? What did you Google? Animated and alligator hat?
Alligator hat funny.
Listen, Baby Nation, we're going to get back to you on that about how that goes. Tanner, I'm going to need you to kind of come back.
Let me get back to my notes.
Yep. We're coming to the end of the episode. We've got a few segments. We've got 2 segments in my mind that we need to get through.
Yep.
One of them is my literal favorite segment of all time. Are you ready to talk about this?
Yeah.
Do we have a way of introducing it?
I'll introduce it because it's your turn.
Okay.
Baby Nation, there's one character in these books who seems to be living a different life from everyone else. Uh-huh. Everyone else is living in this sleepy town, Stony Brook, Connecticut. But there's one character named Jackie Radowski who is prone to accidents. He's prone to mistakes. He's our walking disaster.
Uh-huh.
But it's not his fault. Jack Shepard and I have come to realize that he is a time jumper, a time walker who is unstuck from time, constantly skipping back and forth between the past, the future, and the present. This week, Jackie Radowski was up to smijinx.
Yeah.
So Jackie makes a number of appearances this week, but I think the most interesting to explore.
And ladies and gentlemen of the Baby Nation, this segment is called
Track and Jackie.
Track and Jackie.
We have to go back.
Here's what we've established. Jackie Radowski.
This is a complicated segment.
Yeah, I'm going to explain
a lot of
it.
Layers.
I'm going to explain it super fucking fast. Jackie Radowski is always tripping over things. He's super clumsy in a way that doesn't totally make sense. What we have learned and what Anne Matthews Martin, Princess Anne Martin, has discovered for us and shown to us is that what is actually happening is that Jackie jumps in and out of time, and when he jumps, the last thing that was on his mind, the last thing that occurred to him, influences where he goes. And then he lives out a lifetime in that world or in that space or on that temporal plane.
Right.
And then he blips back, and as far as Claudia and Stacy and Christy are concerned,
any of us,
nothing is happening except that he just tripped over his shoelaces.
But as we know, he lived out an entire lifeline.
Right.
Jack Shepard.
Yes, sir.
Jackie made a few appearances in this book. There's one in particular that jumped out at me, and I'm curious to hear what you think happened to him.
Great.
Stacy is going through some shit. She calls up the Babysitter's Club during club meeting. Sacred time. But Christy gives her a pass. She goes around the room talking to everyone. She eventually makes her way to Christy. She says, "How's our walk-in disaster?" Jackie Radowski? "Just the same. Babysat for him last week, and he rode his bike right into the garage wall. Skinned his knees, broke a flower pot, and later dropped a pizza on the floor. At least he didn't drop it on the rug."
Yeah.
Jack?
Yeah.
Paint me a picture.
Let me paint you a picture.
Paint me a picture with words. What happened to Jackie Radowski?
So there's a lot going on here.
Yep.
That's the first thing that happened to Jackie Radowski chronologically in this book, right?
Right.
He rides his bike into a garage wall, skins his knees, breaks a flower pot, drops a pizza on the floor.
Yep.
The second thing chronologically that happens to him in this book, he squirts his hot dog across
the kitchen. Room. Yep. It slips right out of the bun, shoots across the room.
Squirts into the wall.
Yep.
The third thing that happens to him chronologically in this book. "Group hug," cried Claudia. "And then the kids dropped their banner and ran to us babysitters. If you think there was hugging when I left New York, you should have seen what went on in the front yard of our new house."
Yep.
"Although I have to admit that some of the boys, David, Michael Thomas, and Jackie Radowski in particular, said loudly that hugging was gross." Yep. "Then we were all distracted when Jackie, our walking disaster, fell over a packing carton and cut his lip."
Yep.
That is the third thing.
Yeah.
Chronologically.
You want to cut? You think you can manage to tie all three of these events together?
In my mind,
yeah.
That third thing is what happens to Jackie first.
Okay. Walk me through it.
There's a group hug.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie's wondering about the dynamics of a group hug.
Yeah.
What do you do? A bunch of people get together. They hug each other.
Yeah. Sounds icky.
He's like, "Oh, that sounds icky." He's just a 6-year-old boy.
Yep.
All of a sudden, he looks around. It's cold. It's icy. The wind is blowing. He's on Robert Falcon Scott's Terra Nova expedition to the South Pole. They're hugging each other for warmth.
Yeah.
He suddenly realizes just what a group hug can mean when you're in extremis.
Yeah.
When you're at the edges of...
Your very life depends on it.
What humans can do.
Right.
It's not icky. It doesn't matter whether it's icky or weird. This is it. This is all we have. We're hugging each other for our very survival.
Right. Should we explain that Sir Falcon?
Falcon Scott?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk
Sir
about
Falcon
it?
Sir Falcon Scott led an expedition to the South Pole.
Yeah.
In the early 20th century.
Yeah. Didn't go great.
Didn't go great. Yeah. Most of them died.
Yeah.
All of them died?
I have a book on it that is written by one of the guys who is like on the first part of it.
Yeah.
It's just his diary of it. And the title of the book is The Worst Journey in the World.
Yeah. So it didn't go great. Yeah. This group of explorers went down to the South Pole. Most of them died.
Everyone died at the end.
Everyone.
Not the folks who were on the boat. But
yeah.
Robert Falcon Scott, Jackie Radowski.
Yeah.
And the other explorers just, and they were like so close to their boat, but they couldn't get out. And this is a true story from this expedition, Baby Nation, if you'll indulge me. Robert Falcon Scott is sitting there. He's writing in his diary. He's like, "We're not going to make it. We're so close to the boat, but there's a fucking blizzard. We can't go out." And Jack Radowski is sitting there, and he's just like, I've got frostbite. I've got frostbite. My legs have frozen. I'm going to die. I'm holding you back.
Yeah.
He realizes that if they are ever going to walk again, he's going to hold them back and jeopardize their chances of living.
Right.
Once he realizes that even if the blizzard abates and they can go back to the ship, he's just going to hold them back.
Right. And also, frankly, this is but a moment in time to the eternal being that is a Jackie Radowski. Right.
But he's so cold. He's so cold.
So cold.
He realizes he's jeopardizing the mission. He's holding them back. He gets up. He looks out of the tent. He turns around and he says, I'm going for a walk. I may be gone some little time. And he just walks out into the snow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
just that the last cold overtakes him.
Thing that he remembers is the human touch of a group hug.
Yeah.
And then, boom, he's back. He's back, not in that moment, but in a moment about a day ago in Stony Brook. His fucking hot dog squirts out of the bun, hits the wall.
Yep.
And then, boom, he's back again, and he drops his fucking pizza on the ground.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what Sir Falcon Scott's associate...
I'm pretty certain that it was Jackie Radowski.
Yeah, and he's lost control of his body because he's freezing to death.
Yeah.
In the southern tundra.
Right.
And then he's back and he's shivering uncontrollably.
Yeah, and then he rides his bike right into a garage wall. He's like, bye, Mom. I'm just going out for a bike ride. I may be gone some little time.
Yeah.
And then just boom.
Yep.
It's over.
That makes a lot of sense.
Skins his knee.
So there you go. What historians.
Yeah, fucking eat it, historians.
Stick that in your pipe.
Tanner.
Yeet.
Let me ask you a quick question here.
Yeah.
This is a serious question.
Yeah.
And it is as follows. Did you, sir, have a...
Bird of the week!
I am Satan, reborn on the earth.
You can't hear that, Baby Ninja. Just ignore that. Sir, did you have a burn of the week?
Yep. Stacy is babysitting her two favorite New York charges one final time, Grace and Henry.
Uh-huh.
Grace and Henry are sad to see her go, but they are excited to spend one last evening with her.
Uh-huh.
They're worried that their parents are going to get a divorce, but Stacy assures them that their fights are but minor spats.
Right.
And that their parents actually love one another.
Very much indeed.
Yeah, said Grace. This morning, Mommy said to Daddy, I love you. And Daddy said, I love you too. And they kissed.
Mm-hmm.
I smiled. That's nice. You guys don't have anything to worry about. I walked the kids into Grace's bedroom, where we read Millions of Cats. Then I tucked her in, said goodnight to her, and walked Henry to his bedroom, where we read Outside Over There. The note I captured is my burn of the week. I bet Millions of Cats is Jack's favorite book.
You son of a bitch. Fuck you so bad. I will substantiate that as much as I don't want to, because I didn't capture that section, but I definitely read that section and I was like, oh, that sounds that sounds like a really good book.
Gotcha.
Look that up.
This week's Burn of the Week is on you, Jack Shepard, because your favorite book is probably Millions of Cats.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
A book that promises millions of cats.
No. Yeah. Yeah. My notes this week are just like, reread Hamlet. Look up Millions of Cats. Tanner.
Yeah.
Sir.
Jazz.
You know what we're doing here right now?
Yep.
We're wrapping up.
Are we?
Sir.
Okay. Yeah. I'd love to. I just ordered food to my wife. She sent me a text saying, love to see you before bed tonight.
Yep.
Just like Mr. and Mrs. McGill.
Yep. Next week, we're reading a book that is called Mallory and the Mystery Diary. It's a mystery book that doesn't feature Marianne.
I'm confused.
Yep, as am I. Mallory maybe finds a mystery diary? Who fucking knows? It sounds pretty awesome.
We're going to have to find a new bedrock, too.
Yeah.
I'm listless right now.
Something that we care... Well...
I lost Mimi, I lost McGill's.
My bedrock, honestly, the only thing that's kept me going is Mr. Spear and Don's mom.
Well, this is a new civil war brewing.
You think Maureen's going to play a spoiler here?
I ship...
Maureen?
Maureen, McGill, and...
Mr. Spear.
We haven't looked in his name yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I ship them.
Well, I ship. And ladies and gentlemen of Baby Nation who don't know what ship means, don't feel bad about it.
Short for a relationship.
But it's like when you care about a relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I ship. Fuck my life that it's come to this. But I do genuinely ship Mr. Spear and Mrs. Schaefer.
Yeah.
Or Ms. Porter.
Oh. Yeah. You think she's going to end up with? You think Mr. Spear's going to end up with Morbid Destiny?
No, I don't. I know that, and a Baby Nation member has pointed this out to us, that Don's mom's maiden name is Porter, just like Morbid Destiny, something we don't have time to get into this week.
So you think Mr. Spear's going to end up with Morbid Destiny? Weird, out of left field, but fine. I've been Tanner Greenring.
I've been Jack Shepard.
This has been the Babysitter's Club Club. Join us next week when we discuss book number 29. Mallory.
And the Mystery Diary.
Mystery Diary.
You did such a good job. I'm just going to let you end there.
Claudia.
Don't you fucking.
You just said you're going to let me end it.
There. I'm going to let you end there. I am now going to say. Claudia is wearing a bra now. And the way she talks, you'd think boys had just been done.
In 86, N.M. Martin wrote the first book. What became a cult? Now it's time for Babysitter's Club.
Ooh. Listen, I can tell you now something that's not gonna make the fucking episode is like the scenes of you pulling shit out of my brick wall.
How do you say four?
In French?
Yeah.
Quatre.
Un, deux, trois,
quatre.
Hmm.
I don't like it, what you're doing with the R there.
Quatre.
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 Don't get too hung up on it. It's just quatre.
Quatre.
It's like cat.
Cat.
And then.
Quatre.
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 Good.
Un, deux, trois, quatre.
Now I'm worried about your 1, 2, and 3, which are all a little shaky as well.
They're good. Un.
Deux.
Trois.
Trois. Let's get that.
Trois.
Trois.
Un.
Un.
Deux.
Deux.
Trois.
Quatre. Perfect.
Got it. Going to France next week. That's good. Helpful. Thank you.
Great. Counts to four.